So, have you heard about the new diet recommended by the UN? We're not going to talk about that first because it's not that appetizing, but we are going to get to it. But the first topic we're going to do, we're going to talk about creativity. Is ChatGPT the enemy of creativity, or does it have a place with, alongside, or within creativity? We'll debate that. Also, Canada continuing to negotiate, reach agreements with major social platforms regarding news, and perhaps we'll have an update on YouTube and podcasting as well. It's all coming up next on the Stream Leader Report. Rebecca, what are we going to do now? I believe you said let's do a show.
Well, let's do
it's
a show.
Stream Leader Report live panel. Creators talking to creators. Raw, real, and unscripted. And sometimes they say the quiet part out loud. Here are your hosts, Claudia Santiago, Rebecca Gunter, Rob Greenlee, and Ross Brand.
Episode 29 of the Stream Leader Report. This is the live panel edition that we do every Thursday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, with Rebecca Gunter from Business in the Raw, Claudia Santiago, Viva La Stage, and Rob Greenlee, Podcast Tips with Rob Greenlee. I'm Ross Brand. The show is the Stream Leader Report. It's great to have you with us. We've got a lot of hot topics today. We're going to start with ChatGPT and what is its relationship to creativity. A musician named Nick Cave wrote an answer to a question from a couple people about ChatGPT and creativity, and he had strong opinions. And we're going to play that a little bit of it from Stephen Fry reading it, and then we'll get into discussion. Would love to hear your thoughts in the chat as well.
Why bother with the artistic process and its accompanying trials? Why shouldn't we make it faster and easier? When the God of the Bible looked down upon what he had created, he did so with a sense of accomplishment and saw that it was good. It was good because it required something of his own self, and his struggle imbued creation with a moral imperative. In short, love. Charlie, even though the creative act requires considerable effort, in the end, you will be contributing to the vast network of love that supports human existence. There are all sorts of temptations in this world that will eat away at your creative spirit, but none more fiendish than that boundless machine of artistic demoralization, ChatGPT. As humans, we so often feel helpless.
All right, so that's a taste of Stephen Fry reading a letter from musician Nick Cave, basically positing, I guess you could say, ChatGPT as the enemy of creativity, of love, of all things good with the human spirit, and ChatGPT is the greatest killer of all that to ever come along. What say you?
I think that the point that he makes, which comes a little bit later in the clip, is so beautiful. Not that ChatGPT is, you know, this like nefarious enterprise, like a cloud over all humanity, which we do talk about it like that. But that what it does is it just dismisses the amount of human kind of angst or contribute. It does take something of yourself to be creative, and there's a the argument is that ChatGPT just basically flattens that playing field and dismisses like, eh, that didn't take any effort. I did it in 3 seconds. And the more that that becomes like antiseptic and, you know, really just kind of flattened to its basis, takes and extracts the value out of it. And I think that that can feel like a, you know, like a Chicken Little scenario, RB, of like, oh, the sky's falling and where is it all end? I love this clip because at the end of it, I felt such a powerful, palatable hope for humanity in that I just remembered, I leaned back on my old anthropological roots and I remembered that human beings are so tenacious and they'll reinvent themselves in a dime. Like if AI and ChatGPT flatten everything and just extract all the value out of the contributions of humanity that go into being creative, I can't help but wonder if we're just gonna invent a new language, stop entering things on a computer, reinvent the way art is, become absurdist. I felt hopeful about it for the first time after this, because I feel like we're not giving human beings enough credit to just completely reinvent everything, rip it up, start again. So I feel hopeful with this piece.
Claudia, do you think songwriters will just turn to ChatGPT, not worry about lyrics, and eventually not even worry about coming up with original music?
Well, listen, I mean, you know, they have AI people on stage.
Right.
So it's not far off. I wouldn't doubt it if some do. Now, record labels have positioned themselves to both have a business where it's artists in the flesh and blood, and also a business where it's ChatGPT AI. So those huge corporations are sitting up for, I think, not just two business models, but many business models. I mean, look at Taylor Swift, who couldn't even buy her own songs back from a label. So what does she do? Is she redid her tunes and re-recorded, re-released. So yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of thoughts on this one, and but I'll rotate the ball over to your court for a minute. But I do have
talking stick.
I'm actually gonna, you know, I noticed something on my set here, so I'm just gonna go grab it, but keep talking, you guys, and
all right,
and then I'll pipe in again.
Rob, you must see a good side of this with all the things that creators have to do that aren't necessarily that creative.
Yeah, it's a very complicated subject, I think, he raises from the standpoint of, you know, what is the role of humans in this process versus this emergence of this new intelligence? You know, I think that this new intelligence has a place in the world too that's carving its own out there, and I think it's up to us to decide, you know, how much of our human creativity, our uniqueness that we want to put out there too, maybe in combination with it. But I think that the creativity side of it is an important point. You know, I think humans have a creative element to them, and certain humans have more creative abilities in certain areas than other humans do. So, So you kind of could look at AI as a way to, I think what was alluded to a little bit of a leveling the playing field, is that people that maybe don't have as much creativity in a certain area can use AI to basically improve what they're doing. But I've also seen that AI around creativity isn't always able to express the human interest in what that generates. So that's the thing. I think it's becoming its own thing, right? And and for us to think that it's going to replace us is probably the wrong way to look at it. It maybe is an augmentation of humanity for those that maybe have weaknesses that need to have skills in certain areas to accomplish something, but it's not a replacement for Claudia's ability to create music. It, you know, she might be able to generate more music, but that's probably, if you look at the long term, there's an interest in what's called watermarking content that's created by AI technology, increasingly on the video side, and I would think on the image side, because it does get back to copyright at the end of the day. I don't know that this issue has been settled yet, but you know, there may be things that Claudia or myself or Ross, you create in the future that is AI generated, but that may be a different, perceived in the market as something different than what you create yourself with a video camera versus doing a chat GPT query. So,
right.
So that's kind of how I look at it too. I don't, you know, there may come a time with superintelligence that this being that we've created with AI, and this is the more general intelligence, kind of takes its own sentient existence and takes its place right next to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think right now there's some limits to what ChatGPT can do in terms of creativity.
Yeah,
it can at times, not always, but at times it will give you a very accurate by the book answer to a question or a query, right? And you can go down the bullet points and go, those are all correct. But it's also somewhat generic. It doesn't have my experiences, my personality,
right,
and such in it. And I think what might happen, so let me say it this way. It's not a replacement for the higher level art. It can't do great art. Where it's going to probably take things that are, I don't want to say lower level art, but like non-essential things to the human creative spirit, like a daily newsletter listing bullet points of things going on that day or whatever. And it's going to make those faster and not as interesting as they had been. Just as in... since automation's come along, most people's Twitter feeds or X feeds are nowhere near as interesting as they were 7 years ago or 8 years ago. Now, somebody's live video or Twitter space is every bit as creative or interesting or passionate or personal as it's ever been. Right. But in terms of the daily tweets that people are scheduling, yeah, they're far less interesting, far less likely to be read, often generated by, you know, some type of automated system that, you know, grabs three in this genre and throws them into a list with two recycled and whatever. And it's like, okay, so it's not, but how important is that to human creativity versus those people who are writing long tweet threads that are opining on major issues of the day, or like I say, people who are doing live or recorded video, podcast spaces, things like that, where there still is real creativity, and it's probably a higher level skill anyway than writing a tweet linking to an article. So you could say at the lesser end, it's not, something's lost. But how important is that versus, you know, those things that are more bringing more of us to the table anyway?
Yeah.
So, again, I think the message of positivity is like leaning in on that essential human creativity and embracing that rather than being scared of what's on the horizon. Just like, you know, the very simple, I know the difference between a sandwich bread out of a bag and homemade bread.
Yeah.
Right. Even though like the fact you walk by the factory and it's like, oh my God, it smells so amazing. Yeah. And sometimes it's fine. And sometimes I want homemade bread. So, you know, I'm feeling really positive about the whole thing because I think our level of discernment is keener than we give it credit. And our ability to pivot is more adept than we're giving ourselves credit. So,
well, I think just a follow up on that real quick. Like, I think our mass produced bread is nowhere near the quality of the bread you would get in a store 30 years ago.
Right.
But, your home cooked meal can be every bit as interesting and creative and delicious as it ever was, and fresh and healthy, you know, if you have the right ingredients. So like Yeah, I think there's that dichotomy going on right now and throughout society where things have become very easy. Quality has sort of gone down in a lot of ways because we can create them in bulk, at scale, fast, using inexpensive products, not having the human care put into them. But at the higher level, you know, I think, you know, the home-cooked meal is still a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I feel like the dialogue is really around, oh my God, we will only ever have bread sandwich, like commercial sandwich bread in a bag ever again. And we forget that eventually we came back and embraced the homemade bread.
Okay, I'm holding my shoe up, guys. So I just realized this was hanging out on my congas here. And you know, I recently just recorded a video for Expert TV. They're doing a summit, and my talk was on finding your voice and uniquely you. And it had to do with this whole topic of AI and technology changing and possibly overruling us and all this and that. But you know, I was really encouraging people to dig into their story, who they are, who they uniquely are. You know, when we broadcast, okay, like when people come to my show, they know they're going to get a full on stage experience. I could use a green screen. Don't get me wrong. I don't have a problem with green screen. In fact, when I travel, sometimes when I'm doing like Zoom calls or whatever, you know, I throw on the green screen because I don't want to get the people that are walking around in public, right? But I don't for my shows because I want to bring people into a real life stage experience. And me seeing this right now, I didn't even plan this, but I want to bring this shoe out. Okay, so when I'm doing a performance, I throw this on there because I have a story. Once upon a time, I was so sick. I was wheelchair bound. I was deemed never be able to travel. All of this. Well, look at these puppies. I wear these on stage. These are actual stage shoes. And look, they're all blingy because I'm doing a Gloria Estefan tribute. So, you know, these travel with me to different nations and my story comes into the thing. So can ChatGPT do that? No. Can AI do that? No. So what am I bringing? I'm bringing something that is my story, something that's uniquely to Claudia. I bring a stage that brings you a live stage experience. So what I'm saying with this is, why do I even bother? Why do I even bother? Because of love. I love my audience. I love humanity. I want to connect with their hearts. Whatever I produce, I want to deliver with love because that's my intent. That's I want to see them get ahead. I have artists that write me, DM me after shows and go, how do I do this? How do I, you know? So at the end of the day, I just, you know, with all this is, again, I love what he was saying in that talk. It is, there is a basis of love there.
Right.
Otherwise, all we're doing is producing whatever. Anyways, I have nothing wrong with green screens. You know what? There are ghostwriters. I've even done some ghostwriting. There are companies that have somebody else, or even large brands have somebody else handle their social. Does that make them not legit? No. It means they're just being efficient. But then I guess we all have to weigh out at the end of the day as creatives, as entrepreneurs, is what part of us and what part of our business are we going to deliver? Write an original song, Rebecca, write an original piece versus have ChatGPT do it.
Yeah.
I think it maybe comes back to like, what is your competitive advantage or what is your unique spark of genius that you can't outsource? That ChatGPT or some third party, you know, consultant or whatever is not going to do for you what you can do to connect with your audience.
Exactly.
But there are other things that we have to do as part of running a business, being a creator, whatever, that ChatGPT could probably do very close to, like, we could live if it just did it at an industry standard level, like just did it as the typical outsourcing company could do it for you or whatever. That may be good enough if it's not the essential area, so you can do more of serving the customer, if that's your specialty, or do more of writing a new book or hosting a new show or, you know, performing or whatever it is that really separates you. So in that way, it's sort of a utility, like a computer has made it faster versus keeping everything on paper files.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I just want to add on a travel visa, international, like I'm an international recording artist, speaker. When I go into a different country, okay, and if I'm going to work in that country, if I'm going to do shows there, if I'm going to be there for an extended period of time, I have to prove to that company that I am an extraordinary ability. Okay, ChatGPT can't do that for me. There's got to be some cred there, commercial releases, I sing in multiple languages, Why? Because every nation is trying to protect their people from outsiders taking their job. So right. Back to writers, songwriters, and all this and that, okay? If songwriters refer to ChatGPT to write all their tunes, guess what? That's going to limit a lot of their cred to even perform in other countries. So I'm just talking on a legal end here, on a visa end, on workability in other nations. So just saying.
I want to bring in a comment from our great friend Beauty Bubble, who says maybe a reason to keep AI away from our dreams is where we are headed. When we share our deepest selves with the wrong people or technology, we live at risk to purpose to pursue creative endeavors. Let me read that again. I don't. Maybe a reason to keep AI away from our dreams is where we are headed. When we share our deepest selves with the wrong people and or technology, we live at risk to pursue creative endeavors.
I would share my deepest dreams with Beauty Bubble any day. That's definitely the right person to share it with. Yeah. What a supporter. Of all the industries affected by ChatGPT, I think that copywriting industry has been one of the most scared. And so behind the scenes on those conversations where copywriters are literally freaking out about their ability to continue on as a copywriter, in my real world experience, I have two clients who actively use ChatGPT in addition to using me as a copywriter. And at first I was like, oh boy. But over the last 8 months, they've very clearly understand when do they use ChatGPT, which my one client calls Becky, and when do you use Rebecca? And that is showing itself in real time to be a distinction. And my hope is that we'll all get that way. So from the copywriter field where we're all running scared, it's not the end of the world.
Now, have your clients trained ChatGPT to write in your style or to use your resources for
they have used my positioning statements, so which I would encourage. I would be curious, write this in the style of Rebecca Gunter. I am not threatened by that. I honestly, because from a branded copywriting perspective, my goal is to give you a voice that you can then, you know, bring in another person to write. It doesn't always have to be me. Right. So for me, I don't have a big ownership over my style and also at me. Like if you can write like me, I don't know. But I would be curious if you could train a GPT on my style. It's so quirky, but maybe. I mean, words are words.
You're going to take all your copy that's out there and feed it into ChatGPT.
Yeah. You know that's what I'm scared of, RB. Like, I run on Google Docs.
Call it Stone Fruit GPT. And it's just for people who want to churn out copy that sounds like... Okay, that's a bad idea, Ross, and stop giving that out to the world.
I'm going to have to go back to the Stone Tablet GPT. That's what I'm gonna
say. You know, on a coaching end too, I just want to encourage all coaches out there and those that have businesses that are in transition. I'm encountering this. I don't know if you guys are, but I'm encountering this. A lot of clients are scared to death as to where do I go now? And so all of a sudden, I'm delving into a lot of mindset coaching and training in tech. Demystifying, getting the fear out of the next steps. And some of them are scared to death to create with ChatGPT for any legal ramifications down the road. Especially if they're going to be producing a product and distributing, you know, there's all those legalities. Like, how am I going to cross that road if all of a sudden the ChatGPT police comes after me?
Right.
We don't know. All those infrastructures aren't any, not even out there. There's no guidebook. So anyways, on a coaching end, you know, I just want to encourage everybody to step into that mindset coaching part piece, because it's very important right now. Clients are freaking, not just creators, but your clients, they are freaking on many levels. And so, but it's a good investment. It's a good thing to invest in people's mindset.
Well, one career that could be impacted, I guess, or is being impacted, is that of the influencer. Rebecca, what is going on with AI models?
I thought we were having conversations of hope and excitement about human creativity. This is such an interesting article to me on so many levels. But an agency, gosh, Ross, I think this is in South America, maybe. Take a look here. Spanish. Here we are. Spanish modeling agency has created the very first AI influencer who's earning $11,000 a month. She is 25 years old. She has pink hair. She is put into all kinds of scenarios that a typical product model would be. And boy, she's not mouthy. She's not hungry. She doesn't not show up. This Spanish advertising company has decided that this is so much easier to work with than those pesky human creators, because she doesn't give pushback, not show up, or have creative differences.
And she doesn't have to be paid.
And she doesn't have to be paid. She's described as a strong and determined woman. A passionate Scorpio. Indeed. So let's take a look at her picture one more time. Let's get her up there. Strong and determined woman.
There you go.
Making $11,000 a month. In modeling feats.
Pink hair all the way, right?
Those pesky humans with their annoying opinions and their creative ideas.
Damn it, I like my AI models to have natural hair color.
I kind of was describing this as like marketing's blow-up doll. Just standing in.
So, Ross, I've screen shared a image of Chat GPT. It's a derivative of Chat GPT that you can create now, and it's actually like your own personal Chat GPT bot that you can share externally. And how this works is that you go in and you train this to focus on a particular expertise, right? So this particular, it's called GPT is what they call it. It's not Chat GPT. It's a derivative of Chat GPT that's called just GPT. And so this particular bot that I created, it's basically is an expert on StreamYard podcasting. It's based on information that I gave it. And this chat box of sorts will guide you on how to produce, publish a podcast on StreamYard. So it actually has all of the Q&As, all that stuff that's inside of StreamYard. So if I go in here and I click, how do I start a podcast with StreamYard? It's a pre-filled out question that then goes in and posts that prompt, and it generates the step-by-step process of creating a podcast on StreamYard. So
that's fucking awesome.
Yes.
So Rebecca, you really can have your own writing.
I want to have one from my stone tablet.
Right, and it's actually based on information that I have given it. So then it goes out and looks at the internet too and pulls in other resources. So if it has deeper knowledge on on the podcast hosting platforms or on all sorts of stuff, it'll pull all that stuff into this. But mm-hmm. I can upload documents that I've created based on my you know articles, all this kind of stuff, to actually build this thing out. So this is a capability that's available to those that are subscribers to OpenAI. So it's just an example of how this platform is extending into what I would call more kind of smart agents. So really increasingly what we're going to see happen here is these LLMs is what they call it, these language models, are going to ultimately be something that will help us in our lives, to make decisions in our lives. It'll go out and do deep research on a particular, if we assign it a particular task, it'll go out and gather all the information and give a report back to you. Or it will, if you tell it to go out and take an action, it'll go out and you know, like, you know, reach out and contact such and such person. It'll go out and find a pathway to that person. And if you tell it to book a call next Thursday, it'll actually send the emails or it'll send the communications to them to book that. And then it will book it in your calendar. So that's kind of where this is, you know, ultimately where some of this stuff is going, is going to be like a helpful aspect to our lives, not necessarily replacing our lives, but making us more efficient, be able to accomplish more in our lives too. And then also be able to create separate versions of like OpenAI that will help our customers or help our users to understand how to do things in a step-by-step way. And that could be helpful to all of us to increase our productivity, not as a replacement for humans, but it enables us to scale across having an impact on larger numbers of people. So I think over time, that's where the productivity is going to come from. So we're going to have to be better at managing AI technology as a subset of this. At the same time, there's going to be separate superintelligence AI that's going to operate completely autonomous of humans, that will actually be smarter than any one of us, because it's a collective mind of sorts, right? It'll solve, you know, global problems. You know, I think the big question is, will it destroy the world as part of its solution, or will it, you know, basically come up with answers to things that will be more accurate or more precise or actually true and less propagandized, right? Will super intelligence be able to cut through the cloud of what is termed now misinformation to actually analyze the facts, analyze the data, as long as it has access to that, and it will come up with solutions to humanity's problems that are based on real world results and real world data instead of political agendas, which is what we are basing a lot of our societal decisions on today.
And of course, the places where people go to read the facts are still what somebody reported and some editor sifted through several different versions and decided this is what I want to go with. And then lesser journals took this that opinion and amplified it, and then it eventually became the consensus. And so where can ChatGPT go that's outside of the same echo chambers that we're trying not to have shape our opinions about what's true and what's not true? And I think that's the challenge, because it's still relying on my website, my LinkedIn page. Like, I have the ability to shape how I will be perceived out there. And if I wanted to tell a lie, I could tell it on enough platforms that as long as nobody's offering another opinion, and why would they really care about something that went on in my life, right? It can be written in as fact. Okay, I'm not doing that. It doesn't really do me any good. Mm-hmm. But at a governmental level, at a, you know, societal level, you know, a lot of fiction can be written in as fact if, you know, if the New York Times says it or Encyclopedia Britannica ran it or whatever, then that's going to be the definitive story that a lot of society is going to go through. And a lot of the books on a certain topic will also cite those sources and be considered the definitive books on those topics.
Yeah, I think my big worry is that AI will be controlled too much by humans, and that it will be fed incorrect information, and it will make incorrect judgments based on human biases.
So true.
Where if it is out there with its own autonomy and its own strength, I think that there's been a lot of kind of red flags thrown up saying is that AI is going to kill us all and it's going to get out of control. But if it's truly super intelligent and it's far more intelligent than humans, I actually trust that outcome better than having a super intelligent that's been fed a bunch of human misinformation, right? Or controlled by humans that have an agenda.
You know, I'd like to chime in a little bit on...
Yeah.
In the entertainment industry, I'm just going to take it to that industry. Yeah. As artists, we've been controlled by the record labels for years, way back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, once upon a time, they didn't even let us talk to people directly.
Yeah.
They had built up this thing that looked like an artist was successful, but on the road, the artist is eating macaroni and cheese. You know, craft dinner every night. There's next to no pay. But it looks like they're doing so well, but there's huge label dollars behind a product. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you never got the straight goods in Hollywood nor in music. In fact, even publishing houses used to put huge dollars behind a book, and it made a speaker or an author look like, whoa, they're doing amazing. But, you know, the minute those sales decline or the minute they've worn them out on the road on that media tour and that writer can no longer speak or write, they dump them. So really, this has been going on for a very long time. It's just that it looks a little different now.
Mm-hmm. And well, you know, back in the 60s, you could get away with putting a band out with the same name as a band that had a hit song. They learn how to play that song. And because very few people actually knew what they looked like or even had ever heard them play live before, you could cover half the South or half the West before, you know, one of the band members accidentally shows up at a show and discovers that this is going on or whatever.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, the people that had the number one hit are making next to no money. And the people who are pretending to be them, who never had to sign over half their life to a record label or whatever, are taking all the money from the tour.
Yeah. So, you know, the companies, the corporation behind a product will position a product in such a way that works for that corporation to make money. That's the bottom line. And when that thing doesn't make money anymore, they pull the resources and then, you know, off the grid they go. So, again, going back to creatives, what makes us unique? How are we going to create longevity in our careers? How are we going to be willing to reposition, turn on a dime, recreate? Equip those around us so they can also recreate and navigate this huge transition, which I think is pretty exciting.
Mm. Yeah.
What comes to mind for me, particularly with Rob's share, which was really cool to see, thank you for bringing that up, is that, you know, your thoughts around will this technology be like kind of solving in a much more like true ground truth way, solving the world's problems. However, unless I don't understand it, we can't create a new solution that hasn't been done before, right? Like ChatGPT will never be able to like invent a new way through something. So if we need to innovate or if something doesn't work anymore, that's not a thing that can help, right? Mm. Like novel problem solving isn't ever going to be in the bailiwick, or do I misunderstand that?
I think though new solutions in part come from looking at old models and selecting a piece from here, a piece from there, and then adding some element that nobody thought of adding to it. So those elements could be out there already, and perhaps they just weren't mixed in a certain way, or, you know, the right. It's like on a team, do you organize the how you organize your talent? There's a person who's best at finance working in finance, and the person who's best at sales in sales, or do you have your person who can sell working in finance because they're okay with numbers, and the person from finance who's a whiz is out knocking on doors wondering why nothing's getting sold or what, right? So like sometimes it just may be reordering the parts, or it's trying something you haven't tried before, maybe.
That's good.
Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah.
Interesting topic, you guys, always.
But I think one of the problems, and not that the humans always have the most evolved moral sense or whatever, but can it judge that something may be a problem, but it's not a problem that has to be solved, or that the solution is something that's not within our moral understanding of what we could live with or accept, or what wouldn't be horribly cruel, or what have you.
Yeah, emotional intelligence. That's a good point.
Yeah.
So good.
Like, what do we do with the fact that ChatGPT solved for me the fact that, like, none of the kids like this one kid in the class, and ChatGPT goes, well, if we kill that kid in the class, everybody will get along. Well, true, but... You know, that isn't the way we would go about solving that. Helping kids all get along in a classroom or whatever is not to eliminate the one kid but to teach kids to be tolerant of that child, or that child the social skills to better interact with the peers, or what have you. And so that's kind of a fear that I have of this thing, that like, okay, solving everything the most efficient way isn't solving for the greater good, or for what we really want for humanity.
Well, let's really think about what do we think superintelligence really means, and what if we were super intelligent, each one of us, not just human intelligent, would we choose to kill people to solve problems? I think that's a lower level of intelligence. Not a higher level of intelligence as a way of solving problems.
Who are we talking about, though? Just kidding.
Well, you know, if you think about, you know, typically who murders who, right? It's usually a lower base emotional response, not a intellectual endeavor, right? It's usually not a intellectual endeavor what people do emotionally when they inflict violence on other people. And I don't know that AI is going to naturally have that. If it achieves super intelligence or godlike capabilities, you know, I just don't want to believe that super intelligence means that it's more brutal.
So I just want to bring back a little bit, circle around from one of our other broadcasts where we actually talked about Elon and company.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, dug up some more info, there's companies that have released this implant thing way before Elon even got the FDA approval on his. So it's a real thing. It's not like just some whatever thing that he's come up with, but they literally have surgical rooms, you know, and it's $10,000 to get one of these things put in. And the stats are staggering as to the forecasting. Now, I used to work for an accounting firm, and the forecasters there, they don't lie. They're number geniuses, and when they predict things with numbers, they've done some homework. So this kind of thing is not far off. And Elon's take on it is that he also not just wants to help the medical, you know, community with people with disabilities, but he wants to get rid of the whole ChatGPT AI thing with this brain implant.
Well, it won't be needed, right?
Go ahead. Just was it chipping me already? I mean, clearly I'm not getting out of this alive one way or the other.
And then you can customize like what other things you want.
Customize my brain.
Well, right? If you want that little camera at the tip of your tongue, you know, like.
Well, and Mr.
Downloading my ability to like bugs, foreshadowing it.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Exactly. Oh, we have to go there, don't we?
No, I was just going to say if ChatGPT makes the decision that humanity can't make a case for business for humanity, we better find ways to be less. Less hungry, shall we say.
Right.
A couple of comments I want to just mention quickly. Bruce McKay says, virtual people are unsettling. Does AI equal danger, Will Robinson? And Beauty Bubble says, as I understand it well, you can upload all your transcripts. That's talking about if you have like a personal GPT, I believe. But she says, with seven fingers, no doubt, referring to the AI. Model. So let's move over to, would you eat bugs to save the planet? This is the advice, I guess, from the UN climate change folks, that this is the next stage in human evolution and getting us off of a meat-based diet for the good of the planet. Who wants to attack this first?
I would love to.
Go ahead, Rob.
I've got a couple of strong thoughts on it. And I don't know. I shared with the group a video that was put on YouTube from a kind of like a functional medicine doctor who's kind of about a year ago or so, he dug into this topic because this topic seems to be growing in momentum. And from his research, it shows that there is some validity here. But if you were to rank the nutritional contents, okay, just compare just the basic nutritional profile of insects versus what humans have traditionally eaten, which is, you know, chicken, beef, pork, vegetables and things like that. Insects have less nutritional value, just generally across the board. Bugs have always been eaten by humans for the millennium. That's how a lot of the early mankind survived, is by eating small insects. In between there, so it was almost like a snack kind of thing, in between the big meals that they have when they took down a deer or something, or a cow or whatever they killed for meat. And then they filled in with other types of vegetables, right? That also had nutrient profiles. So at the end of the day, it's really, you know, and bugs are eaten around the world in some countries that are kind of starving, right? So it kind of gets back to this issue of how hungry are you? Are you willing to... at least get some nutrition because you don't have access to beef, pork, and chicken and all the stuff that we do here in the U.S. So I think if you look at it objectively, there is some nutritional value there. There doesn't seem to be any research evidence saying that it's harmful to the human body. It just has less nutrient value is kind of the takeaway that I have. And the ick factor is pretty high, right, for most of us that have grown up not eating insects. So that's the other factor here. But the world, there is a lot of momentum behind making powders and things like that that can be added to, you know, our recipes and things like that that are based on insect protein and those kind of things that I think are, I mean, really, if you look at the history, red dye, I think it is number 6 or whatever, has always been based on beetles. So there's a history of us having insects in our diet already. We just didn't know about it. It's not like the red dye manufacturers were out there saying that they comprised bugs to make their red dye. It's not like they advertised that. So it's, you know, it's the ick factor is really what we're dealing with here. And I think, you know, And the excuse of doing this, which is also a little bit of a red herring here too, is that somehow you're fighting climate change. And I think that there's absolutely no evidence that eating bugs is fighting climate change. I just think it's driving a particular narrative that people want to create for this. But I don't think there's any research evidence that showing that if we cut back on being a, you know, having cattle or chicken or whatever, that's going to dramatically impact the climate.
I think about the ecosystem too. How is this going to affect that? I mean, there's animals that eat certain things, and
It's a balance, right?
Yeah, it's a balance, right? Yeah. And then I think the thing that shocked me so much when I found this was that there's restaurants already open, and that's all they serve.
Right.
And so they have a clientele that's what they've decided they're going to do to help the climate change make a difference in that. But more importantly, I think what really bothered me was the fact that, well, I shouldn't say fact because it hasn't been imposed yet, but the talk of that there's going to be down the road, like classes of people where the majority of proteins available are going to be bugs or bug made. Mm-hmm. And then the class that has the money to pay for a steak dinner or whatever, or meat, you know, other types of protein, that's going to be so sky high, unaffordable for the general population that you're going to be, the government could enforce this. And there's big food companies behind this, which is really alarming.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, just that, I guess, again, taking away our choices, that was like, woo, red flags.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm also a little bit concerned about maybe some insects having neurotoxins in them.
Yes.
I think that there is a factor there. I'm not sure that most of the bugs that are being promoted as edible sources have neurotoxins. It's not like, I don't think we're going to be eating snakes anytime soon. So that's the concern on my side. I know some people probably do eat snake, but
in Vancouver, I used to live in Vancouver. There was a place called the Rattlesnake Grill.
Mm-hmm.
And they did serve snake.
Yeah.
I never ate it.
I just don't like the idea that they're trying to eliminate beef, pork, and chicken from being accessible to us for the reason of climate change. Because there just isn't any evidence, really, of solid evidence that it would make a big difference. And then the shift also to artificial meat, that has definitely been proven to be unhealthy for humans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I would definitely stay away from that fake meat stuff. Definitely. If you have to choose between insects or fake meat, they probably choose the insects.
Rebecca?
Yeah, I guess I have to.
Fake meat. It's either you or me, so why don't I just throw it?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Fair enough.
You're welcome.
I'll say one thing, and that is that, I don't know what it would take to collapse the food system globally. It seems like sometimes we're just held up by like a piece of gum and a rubber band. So at least we have something waiting in the wings here. So you gotta risk it for the cricket biscuit.
Beauty Bubble posted some comments in here with some stats around.
I shared those on the screen. I'll share them again.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I guess for me, there's a few things. First of all, I think it's disgusting. No offense to any cultures where this is done.
Right.
You do you, I'll do me. But I think number one, it's not appealing. I agree with Rob that it's a lesser quality of nutrient probably. And when we start manufacturing bug, like, we have factory farms, we have factory bug. What are they going to eat? What are they going to consume? Are we going to spray them? How are they going to be kept? Are they, whatever.
Yeah,
it's not the same as, grabbing a tarantula in Cambodia and deep frying it for, a delicacy or something. this is.
A tarantula? I don't know if I would even consider that.
That's considered a delicacy in Cambodia.
Is it really? Wow.
But again, it's one thing where culturally people want to do it, or they enjoy it, or what have you, or if there's no other option, of course, you would consume that over starving to death.
Right.
But, right. I mean, just the fact, think about it, that the people pushing this, you know, at the UN and other places are going to go to a 5-star dinner tonight on our dime, mm-hmm. when they then go back to a major hotel where they stay, yeah. on their government's dime. And, you know, the resource, and then they're going to fly private back to their own country. And, you know, what they're trying to impose on, particularly on the developing world, where it can even less mm-hmm. afford these changes than we can in the more developed countries, over perhaps a tenth or third, you know, a third of a tenth of a percentage in the global temperature, maybe being able to, you have to wonder. I'm not saying that I don't have any idea. I'm not a scientist. I have no idea whether climate change is real, whether it's threatening, the fact how much humans have to do it. When people who are pushing it don't have a way of gaining from it, people who are pushing this, don't have a financial or lifestyle benefit to themselves, or their companies, or aren't, you know, invested and have equity in these companies, I will be far more open to listening, just as I'll be far more open to listening to people right. in the medical field, for example, if they don't stand to gain from the solutions that they're pushing to illnesses that they may or not have played a role in causing through other things that exactly. they've pushed.
Yeah, and actually, Bruce McKay's got a good comment too that kind of gets back to what I was saying about the myotoxins.
Yeah, myotoxins are a concern with the consumption of insects. Also, mm-hmm. their contact with certain plants can pose allergic reactions for humans.
Yeah.
So well, we got a whole new ball of wax with that, because all of a sudden, you know, you're going to have a huge amount of population eating these things and a whole bunch of different illnesses popping up. And it's like, well, where did that come from? Right.
Yeah. And a lot of the plants that we consume, you know, the vegetables and things like that also have kind of toxins in them as well that we may not even know about that cause an allergic reaction in our bodies as well, that a lot of people don't talk about. But some of these plants that we generally commonly eat have chemicals in them that are trying to prevent people from eating them. So it's a defensive mechanism, and I think insects are really known for having these chemical weapons.
And I say this as somebody who has at different times in my life been a vegan. But there are people who have done very well on an all beef diet, for example, or right. primarily beef right. diet.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've all, you know, our heritage, where we come from, what right. our ancestors have eaten, the genetic mix that we are, and all that factors in our blood type. All these things factor in to why some people get super allergic to a food, and somebody else can eat it 3 times a day and whatever. So that's the other part about pushing a one-size-fits-all solution on the world, is that within our own families, there are people who, you know, one person responds really well to this food, the other person like falls asleep every time they eat it or gets sick or whatever. Yeah. So, so we're going to have top down, you have to eat this or not eat this. It's just, you know,
yeah, I think we're all
another built, form of tyranny.
Yeah. I think we're all built for diversity in our food consumption. That's why there's so many different types of foods in our environment, is that we need a little bit of everything. But if they restrict us down that we can't have beef and pork and chicken and fish and all this stuff, and it's only insects, then that may not be the healthy answer here. long term.
Yeah. That diversity is a key to our resiliency over long term, generationally. Right.
So I just want to say publicly, I am not eating bugs anytime soon.
I'm not either.
Robinson Crusoe, and don't worry, all those booking me out there, my rider does not have the bug menu. Okay, right. Maybe red and M&Ms, but not the bug menu.
Not the
not beetle M&Ms.
Chocolate covered cockroaches anytime
soon? I'm not an adventurous eater when it comes to the ingredients. Like, I'm open to all different kinds of cuisines. I'm open to trying spicy, not spicy, you know, from all four corners of the world. But what goes into it, there are certain limits no matter where or what I eat. You know what I mean? And that's whether it's I eat next door or I eat, you know, on the other side of the world. And
yeah,
it's just not going to change for me. You know, you're going to have to come to my door with a gun to make me eat something I don't want to eat.
Once upon a time, I was on a missions trip and we were at an orphanage way out in like the boonies down in South America. And I remember our team leader said to us, "Okay, now you have to be very polite because these people, like, they work really hard to, you know, they're so excited to have us here. So, you know, they're going to feed us lunch and you have to eat everything that's on the plate or served to you."
Oh, wow.
Okay. Well, you know, there's a bunch of us and we're like Canadians, Americans, right? I mean, I'm the only Latina in the group. And they serve us this. And honestly, the minute it came out of the kitchen, I thought my stomach was turning. I thought I was going to throw up. The smell was awful. I was like, what is in this? And it was like this soup. And it just reeked. I had no idea what was in it. I don't know if it was bat in there or someone's stray cat. Okay. Like, honestly. Whoa. But you see, in some countries, this is a norm. In our culture, it's not a norm. For them, it was like, oh, we're serving them our best. But I knew there was something really wild in there. It was not chicken nor beef, I'll tell you that.
Right. And when something's that far into your system, it's going to treat it as an enemy because it's not, you know, you've gone how many years without having put... I mean, if you're 5 years old, if you've that's not been a part of your diet or your family's diet forever, there's a good chance it's going to make you sick. It's going to be a foreign thing. And yeah. I think we also have to trust our disgust for certain things. Like, maybe there's something in us that's telling us that's not healthy for us. So that's not... although I gotta say there are things that aren't healthy for me that I have no disgust over whatsoever. Most of them are in the freezer or in my bag.
Some cultures see our cuisine as like disgusting.
Right.
Fried foods, right?
Right.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah. Yeah, I think we should rename this show the Stream Leaders Report Bug Report.
Yeah. It's a Stream Leaders Report, what we won't eat this week.
Hashtag trust discuss.
Yes.
Right.
All right, Rebecca, what do you got coming up on Business in the Raw?
Oh, my God. Well, this weekend we're actually going to Janine's physical house in Virginia, and Tony's going to help bring her recording studio up to, like, commercial viability. So they're going to get her voiceover business is getting its big girl panties in terms of technology, and it's going to be really exciting to see that transformation. Thanks for asking.
Claudia, while you recover... What are you up to?
Oh, yes. So I'm not performing. I'm not allowed to perform on stage live in case my musicians knock me over.
Right.
But I am a live broadcasting. And yes, I am. I am on Expert TV's Wealth Summit based out of Europe. And there is a bunch of speakers from all over.
Very cool.
And it's pretty exciting. So that's the 9th, 10th. And then I'm also live broadcasting, and you guys can all join in too, in my Conga Cabana VIP lounge. I am showcasing my Gloria Estefan tribute, which will be on the road as well. So I'm pretty excited about that. And outside of that, I'm working with different clients who are writing and speaking and releasing new products. So woohoo, exciting times.
Cool. Rob, what's on podcast tips tonight?
Oh, we're going to be talking about how to grow a show. So I've got a terrific guest on. Jordan Harbinger is going to join me. He's got a very, 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 very successful podcast. And so he's going to share all of his tips with us about how he grew his show into be such a monster behemoth of a program.
That's a big guest. That's awesome.
And what about you, RB?
Yeah, well, we're getting the band back together for meetups. The New York City Video Creator Meetup hasn't met in person since the month before the pandemic. And we're going to get together with the New York City podcasters and have a meetup for the holidays, just to kind of meet and greet, chat, and get reacquainted, meet some new people. So anybody who's in the New York City area, who's a creator or just interested in, you know, live streaming, podcasting, YouTube, come on down to Times Square area. We're going to,
I would love to join you guys. Yeah.
Oh, that'd be awesome, Rob. I'm going to, finalize a destination soon, but there's links, you know, on my personal profile and on Facebook and such, or just DM me and, I'll send you the link.
So that's on the 12th.
Yeah, Tuesday afternoon, probably about 4:30 to 6:00.
Got it.
And where are you meeting, Ross?
Well, it's in the Times Square area, but we have to finalize the destination or venue. Yeah. So
exciting.
And then we'll be back next week, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, for another episode of the Stream Leader. The Stream Leader Bug Report. No.
Trust disgust.
Yeah, I think we'll have other topics next week. So if you skipped over this one and you're just coming back, it's okay. We understand. I do that myself sometimes with certain topics. But thank you so much for joining us. It's been a lot of fun, and it's always great hosting a show with my friends here. And thank you. We'll see you again next week, Thursday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern. Have a great afternoon, everybody.
Bye.